This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 30th of October 2015. Hello and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 30th of October, which this week have been edited by Angela Ling and Judith Steventon Baker. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: morale at jail lowest, record numbers at festival, and dialer ride hit by budget cuts. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is morale at jail lowest. A former chaplain at Winchester Prison has lifted the lid on alleged bullying, secrecy and rock-bottom morale at the jail. Appalling management and declining pastoral support is partly to blame for a recent crisis of deaths in custody, Reverend Graham Topping has told the Chronicle. Staff are losing their ability to support inmates, he said, echoing warnings made by another source last month. The prison service has said the claims are completely untrue. Reverend Topping, who served at the prison for more than a decade as a chaplain, probation officer and resettlement officer, said morale is the lowest he has ever seen. How many more people have to go to die in that prison before someone does something about the morale, he said. The governor can't see it. He thinks it's wonderful. There are fantastic officers at the prison, very, very committed officers, but they're just walked on, really. Five prisoners have died in custody since July, and two senior officers have left in the last month without a job to go to. It follows two damning reports which highlighted overstretched staff and unsafe conditions. Last year, the Independent Monitoring Board said gang culture was flourishing and violence was on the rise. Reverend Topping cited the sacking of two Salvation Army support workers and the dissolution of a staff consultation board as key blows to morale since David Rogers took over as governor in 2012. He came to the first meeting of the Staff Consultation Committee, and the next thing he did was to disband it and everything linked to it, Reverend Topping said. He was the boss, he was in control, he wanted to know everything. Reverend Topping is a Rotarian, trustee at Winchester Basics Bank and former chairman of governors at Henry Beaufort School and Winchester YMCA. He left in January after 11 years at the prison. He was not required during his employment to sign the Official Secrets Act, which prevents most staff from whistleblowing. On seeing an article in the Chronicle last month, reporting a them-and-us situation between staff and senior management, a furious Mr. Rogers called a staff meeting to track down the whistleblower, a prison source said. And Reverend Topping said he was disciplined for raising his concerns with the government through local politicians. I was accused of bringing the prison into disrepute and was told I wasn't to speak to anybody else about the prison again, he said. I was gagged. A prison service spokesman said, these allegations are completely untrue. A recent inspection report at HMP Winchester found that the governor continues to offer strong leadership despite a challenging prison population. The governor and his senior team are and always have been visible within the prison, ready to listen and talk to staff or prisoners about matters concerning them. The staff at Winchester are dedicated and hard-working. Additionally, a number of new prison officers have been recruited to increase the number of staff at the prison.
Toddlers learnt that there's more to autumn than Halloween last weekend, as record numbers attended a harvest festival on a farm near Sutton Scotney. More than 2,000 people were at Upper Norton Farm on Saturday for pumpkin carving with a difference. The popular event combines face painting and spooky designs with a celebration of seasonal produce. Youngsters strapped on their wellies for donkey rides, worm hunting and chili stringing, creating decorations from long chilies which dry in the kitchen and can be used in Mum and Dad's cooking. For the adults, there were cookery demonstrations, organic food and drink stalls, and live music from acts such as Southampton Ukulele Jam. Farm manager Jason Holt said, "It was a really good event. As always, everybody gets excited about the arrival of autumn. They love it. It's getting kids back to knowing where food is from and appreciating good food, fresh food." Attendance at the event, run by Riverford Organic Farms across the country, was up by more than 300 on last year's figure of 1,700. And there's a delightful picture of three quite small girls tucking into what surely must be organic burgers. And underneath that, another picture of two even smaller little girls in lovely pink wellies sitting on an enormous pumpkin with the headline, "Be careful not to squash it, girls."
Dollar ride hit by budget cuts. Winchester's fleet of vital Dial-A-Ride buses is deteriorating as a result of government funding cuts, prompting fears for elderly mobility. Council chiefs have cut funding to replace vehicles used to ferry older residents on shopping and social trips, meaning they spend more time in the repair shop. It limits the service at a time of increased demand amid an ageing population and cuts to bus routes. Winchester Dial-A-Ride made more than 5,500 journeys between April and September using two specially adapted minibuses which can carry wheelchairs and two cars. Its customer base is largely aged over 80. An experienced volunteer said the branch is negotiating pickup times with customers on a daily basis because it can't meet their needs. The volunteer, who asked not to be named, said, "The whole of Hampshire is suffering as a result of the cuts from government to our local government funds. We're not getting the replacement vehicles like we used to. It puts great pressure on the numbers of people who can actually travel." The volunteer added, "Coming into work and worrying whether you've got three vehicles or one is a change. We have to bid for our work, and if we've got an ageing fleet and we can't commit to being able to offer a service, we won't win the bid next year." Winchester Dial-A-Ride is run by Winchester Area Community Action, WACA, and funded equally by Hampshire County and Winchester City Council. The service, which operates from 8:45 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon, Monday to Friday, runs a door-to-door service aimed at the elderly and the disabled who find it difficult to drive or use public transport. Evening and weekend trips are also available. Users do not have to be registered disabled. They pay more than an average bus fare, but less than a private taxi to go to shops or social excursions. Dial-A-Ride user Phyllis Landor, 91, said she was appalled by the fleet's condition and lack of funding. She said, "It's an absolute godsend. The volunteers put a lot of effort into it, and when it breaks down, they're short of vehicles. Therefore, I have problems. I live at the Lions Hall, the supported housing flats in St. Swithin Street, and a lot of people here use the service." Ms. Landor added, "They really need some funding to get a new vehicle, I think." Evening Dial-A-Ride services have been cut in other areas, including Eastleigh and Basingstoke. Hampshire County Council has yet to respond to a request for comment.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, and first person. Oh, and Belgarum. And then we'll have the announcements and what's on. So we start with the announcements of the deaths this week. Bond, James Hamilton Bond, who died suddenly at home, aged 49. Dorbar, Roger Dorbar, who died peacefully at Southampton General Hospital on the 21st of October. Elliot, Peter James Elliot died peacefully at home at Emsworth on the 25th of October. Goss, Jennifer Goss, after a short illness, aged 65. Hickson, Anne Hickson, died on the 18th of October. Hobbs, Jessie Phyllis Hobbs, died peacefully on the 26th of October, aged 88. Hopkinson, Audrey Patricia Hopkinson, who died peacefully on the 23rd of October. Lozell, June Valerie Lozell, who died peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. McNeil, Elizabeth McNeil, died peacefully on the 11th of October. Parry, Raymond Arthur Parry, who died peacefully in a nursing home in Worthing. And Smith, Louise June Smith, who died on the 21st of October, aged 37. And now we move on to Christian Comment, read by Albie.
And Christian Comment this week is under the heading, When the Bible and Politics Don't Mix. And this is coming from the Reverend Paul Kennedy, rector at East Winchester. When people say that the Bible and politics don't mix, I ask them, which Bible are they reading? So said the South African Bishop Desmond Tutu. However, in the West, there's a temptation to treat faith as a private matter, just a person's inner prayer life, rather than biblical faith being the canvas on which we paint our engagement with the world. But when we pick up the Bible, we soon see that our relationship with God mirrors not just our own self-knowledge, but also our relationship with everything. From the opening story of the creation in Genesis, where potential and fall collide, to the closing prophecy of Revelation, where persecution and restoration mingle. The witness of the Bible is a political witness. Desmond Tutu expands the words of Jesus to show this political engagement. I, if I be lifted up, will draw all, black, white, yellow, rich, poor, clever, not so clever, beautiful, not so beautiful, all. It is radical, all. Biblical faith is an engagement with all. It has to be political. Recent political engagement has seen Church of England bishops calling upon the government to accept more refugees from Syria into this country, and supporting this call with the offer to help find accommodation and support. We also see this engagement with our own Bishop Tim Dakin, urging people to consider donating prayerfully, generously, and sacrificially to help those who are in such desperate need, both in war-torn Syria and flood-hit Myanmar. Borders in Europe are under the threat of closure during this, the largest movement of refugees in Europe since the Second World War. But faith is the call to be open. Jesus tells the parable in Matthew 25, where in a spirit of openness we are able to encounter Jesus in the hungry and the thirsty, the stranger, the naked, the sick, and the imprisoned. However, we are also able to close down and ignore these people. Perhaps we debate the morality of their nakedness or their prison sentence, and in doing so, we miss the calling of Jesus and our own humanity. The First World War poet, Wilfred Owen, perfectly sums up our lack of imagination when he retells the story of Abraham and Isaac, the father called to sacrifice his son. In the biblical account, the son is saved because Abraham understands that a ram caught in a thicket can stand in for his son. The nationalistic leaders at the time of the Great War failed in their imagination to see a way out of the carnage. But the old man would not do so, but slew his son and half the seed of Europe one by one. By faith or common humanity, may we all have the imagination to see our family, friends, even ourselves, behind the eyes of those fleeing the barrel bombs or extremist violence of Syria, and embrace them as we would hope to be embraced.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters, and Nikki's got the first letter, please.
And this from Richard Gibson, Winchester. No idea of impact. Sir, recently I made some comments on the Hampshire Chronicle website about the impact that the various new housing developments in Winchester would have on the traffic along the main arterial roads in Winchester. Another contributor to the website suggested I make a Freedom of Information request to the City Council to see what figures they have been using when assessing new housing development schemes in Winchester. I submitted a request to Winchester City Council asking for traffic flow forecasts for the major roads in Winchester for the next 5 years, back in August. The council said that they would not give me the figures as they were the responsibility of Hampshire County Council and passed my request on to them. Eventually, after some time, more than the 4 weeks quoted for FOI requests, I had an email from the county council which basically says, "We have no forecasts." This means that the city council also has no forecasts, which is presumably why they passed my query on to the county council. I find it hard to believe that the City Council can take sensible decisions about new housing developments when they have no idea what impact these might have on the city traffic. With Barton Farm, Winchester Village, the Police HQ redevelopment, and lots of other infilling developments in the city adding thousands of houses and probably several thousand cars, I believe the traffic in Winchester could become a major problem. The fact that nobody in the City Council or the County Council appears to be planning for this is very worrying and worthy of further investigation by the Chronicle. Richard Gibson, North Walls, Winchester.
And the next letter is on the matter of the station approach development, and it comes from Kate McIntosh of Winchester. Sir, the drive for examining the entire station area as an underperforming district of the city with huge potential was initiated by the 2020 group. I served on the Royal Institute of British Architects Competitions Committee. The 2020 group has repeatedly advised Winchester City Council to seek their expert guidance on the type of competition, the formulation of the brief, and the timetable. All these things are now decided, but Winchester City Council are still in the process of, quotes, speaking to RIBA about engaging the services of a client advisor, close quotes. Following the guidance of RIBA would encourage a better calibre of practice to take the considerable financial risk of entering the competition. On September the 17th, the spokesman for 2020 Group addressed Cabinet, saying, your process has the overall master plan for the area arising as a byproduct of the selection of the designer for one of the sites in it. Everyone involved in the process, including those with a track record in commissioning multiple award-winning schemes and acknowledged built environment experts, has told you repeatedly that this is not a logical way to proceed. Nor have officers, despite repeated urging, sought the advice of the nationally recognised authority on built environment competitions, the RIBA Competitions Office. This is a very high-risk strategy for the city, and particularly you as a cabinet. Repeated reference is made in the committee papers to the need to abide by the public contracts regulations. However, the PCR only applies to services costing over £111,000. A master plan alone would not cost that much, even though the design of the Carfax site will undoubtedly cost more than this. If you commissioned the master plan separately, you could avoid the PCR constraint on consulting the public. Competitive dialogue is not the right route to achieve a master plan without the further interaction as design develops that benefits all projects, particularly with the rushed programme provided. The jury should indeed be vital to the process, yet they are sidelined when the shaping of the submissions lies with officers and unnamed local professionals who carry out the competitive dialogue process under PCR. These vital points have been ignored. And that comes from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, of West End Terrace, Winchester.
R. Burton of Garnier Drive, Bishopstoke, Eastleigh, writes under the heading Poem of Praise. Sir, further to Jeff Naylor's letter, Chronicle, October 22nd, noting the support for the preservation of William Blake's cottage, could I comment on his interpretation of the poem Jerusalem? Blake was a religious fanatic and visionary, also a capitalist in that he set up his own engraving business. He used the word Jerusalem as a synonym for heaven and a home for the soul. His poem is a paean to England and a call to defend it from evil. It has nothing to do with social and economic conditions. His dark satanic mills refer to windmills, which were common in the 19th century before electricity. They had no windows and were full of noisy gear wheels connecting rods and grinding stones. Blake likened them to the works of the devil, satanic, grinding away day and night, and the call on us to fight it. His arrows of desire are Cupid's, with which he wants to motivate us to resist evil. There is much confusion over the word mill. The textile industry was just gathering pace in the 1800s, and it provided displaced people from the land due to the agricultural revolution, when for the first time they were paid regular wages at the end of the week, and regardless of the season. It is not possible to spin cotton or weave threads in the dark.
And from Mr. J. A. Maguire, socially illiterate. Sir, I am one of the residents in this road who diligently puts the proper items in the correct bins as per the instructions on the inside of the lid, because I can read. Most of the houses in my area are occupied by students who do not seem to be able to read, as their overflowing bins contain many items that are not on the recycling list. So all the other residents who fill their bins as requested are in fact wasting their time, as the recycling load is contaminated and consequently worthless. What is the point of it all? Mr. J. A. Maguire, Wavell Way, Stanmore, Winchester.
And another letter on the station approach development. And this comes from L. Millington of Winchester. Sir, I hold no candle for the council, but it is a bit rich for them to be criticised over the station approach public consultation or alleged lack of. We are at a very early stage with no designs anywhere near any table, and people are getting into a flap, stirred up no doubt by opposition politicians who spy a nice issue to exploit for electoral purposes. What is behind this opposition is clear. People in their nice houses in Hyde and Full Flood do not want any development that may impinge upon themselves. Of course, this attitude would see no change at all, at least not within a mile of their homes. Actually, a thought has just struck me. Has anyone considered the car boot sale, the greatest people-watching spot in Winchester, my favourite place on a Sunday? What will happen when the cattle market is developed? Where's the petition? And that comes from L. Millington, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Flawed process. Sir, the confusion surrounding the future of St. Clement Surgery Plans Face Backlash, Chronicle, October 22nd, demonstrates the folly of incorporating provision of essential public services into commercial developments. As soon as any major scheme hits problems and hold-ups, an understatement in the case of Silver Hill, It is the local community which feels the pain, not the developer or the council. These days, low-cost housing, bus stations, recreation and cultural facilities are provided, or not, in the context of the viability criteria of investors who have no interest other than profit in the specific areas they target. This is a model that does not work, but while we're stuck with it, Winchester City Council should be champion for the local community, not a facilitator for outside business interests. Sadly, they seem to have learned nothing from the Silver Hill fiasco. We are now hearing exactly the same complaints about residents being ignored and flawed consultation processes in relation to the proposed station approach development. There's a high level of expertise, knowledge, and genuine love for the area in the local community. I hope it is not drowned in Winchester City Council's sea of rhetoric about the public shaping the development. And that comes from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we're going to step back in time and start 200 years ago. Nikki.
October 30, 1815. Aliens celebrated. Winchester. The trustees and stewards of the Charitable Society of Aliens, established for the benevolent purpose of apprenticing poor children, met on Thursday morning last at 10 o'clock at the Black Swan Inn in this city to celebrate the anniversary of the charity. They went from thence, preceded by the boys, who are at present apprenticed by the society, to the cathedral, where a most appropriate and impressive sermon was delivered by the Reverend H. Huntingford, LLB. Second item, mediation call. London, late advices, received on Wednesday from Naples, announced that a proposal has been forwarded to the British government from the Court of Naples, requiring our mediation to bring about a peace between the King of Naples and the Barbary powers. Should we succeed and be willing to guarantee the continuance of the peace, Naples, it is said, in return for such services, will make a commercial treaty with England, affording such facilities in trade as cannot be otherwise than beneficial to the British nation.
And 100 years ago, October the 30th, 1915, Serbian heroism. For the present, the centre of gravity in the war has shifted to southeastern Europe. It is hardly true to say that the Serbian cause, though much weakened, is hopeless. In the northern part of that country, the prospect is certainly dark because the German armies have made considerable progress. On the other hand, King Peter's troops are fighting with a desperate heroism, and the Bulgarian invasion in the south is not meeting with the success expected. It is clear that a very resolute effort is being made in this region, not only to drive the Bulgarians back, but to carry the war into the enemy's country by the Struma Valley. And the next item is headed Blackout Ignored. Sir, why should Winchester make itself conspicuous by being one of the few towns that ignores the requirements of the government as regards lighting? The city, as viewed from St Giles Hill, is quite brilliant, especially the High Street, with its many exterior shop lights. Last winter, these were all put out, and the number of the street lights diminished. It is strange that when Zeppelins are more frequent visitors, the precautions taken should be less. It seems to me that the municipal authorities incur a grave responsibility in exposing the city to so serious a risk.
And finally, here are two items from 50 years ago, October the 30th, 1965. And the first under the heading, Praise for Alfred. The achievements of King Alfred, protector of the weak and restrainer of the strong, were praised in St. Bartholomew's Church, Hyde, on Sunday at the annual King Alfred commemoration service. Sir Kenneth Grubb, chairman of the House of Laity of the Church Assembly, in his address said, "In these days, when so much is done by corporate action, it is good to remind ourselves of the value of the individual. Such a great and good man as King Alfred enhances the value of all men. He belongs not to a nation, but to all mankind, not to a generation, but to all time. And the second item, warning over UN. In his cathedral address for the 20th anniversary of the United Nations organization, the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend O.H. Gibbs Smith, warned of the apathy and indifference which is in danger of weakening the organization as an effective peacemaker today. "It would be a tragedy indeed," he said, "if the grand conception of the United Nations were to fail in our day because it lacked the dynamic of the Christian religion to quicken it and make it a reality." The dynamic was needed to help the organization achieve its two main purposes: to settle disputes between nations without recourse to war, and to combine the skills and resources of nations to combat the evils of poverty, hunger, disease, and ignorance.
And from 25 years, excuse me, for 25 years ago, October the 26th, 1990, drug-free ravers. Winchester police commended some 400 teenagers for their good behaviour at an open-air party at Bushfield Camp last weekend, but said they would prevent any more illegal gatherings. In the early hours of Sunday morning, hundreds of Bournemouth teenagers descended on the site, now owned by the church commissioners, for an early morning alcohol and drug-free bop. There were three complaints by the public about the noise level, and although several parked cars obstructing St Cross Road were towed away by a local garage, police did not need to make any arrests. And the second item, anger over vagrants. The controversy over vagrants intimidating passers-by in Winchester's city centre is heightened this week with more angry letters to the Hampshire Chronicle from residents and businessmen. Among them, restaurateur Mr. David Bran claims the police are not doing enough. He writes, "Whatever the social cause of the vagrancy problem, citizens and our visitors have a right to walk through the centre unimpeded. There is no doubt that many people do find the city centre vagrants intimidating. Over the past year, we have written several letters to the police, but have yet to receive a reply." Well, that concludes the historical. Now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment, first person and Belgarum. Nikki.
And the editorial comment heading, "Election victory gave mandate for change." A common thread runs through the stories in the Chronicle this week. We reveal unhappiness among staff at Winchester Prison, which some attribute to staffing cuts. The dial-a-ride service is struggling to maintain levels of service. Jobs are being lost at the County Council, and the City Council is considering altering its management structure. The common strand is the reaction to the government-imposed need for austerity. Make no mistake, this is a real game-changer for public services in Winchester and elsewhere. Many people will complain, but there is clearly a mandate in Winchester, as Steve Bride won the election with a thumping 16,914 majority.
And first person comes from Ron Allison, and it's headed, "Look Out, Angry Lords About." Many years ago, well, it was in the 1960s, I had a spell as one of the BBC's parliamentary correspondents. Day by day, it was usually interesting without being exciting. But certainly, in the House of Commons, there were times of passionate and heated debates. This was long before affairs in Parliament were broadcast or even recorded. And so it was up to us, as the broadcasters, on both radio and television, to convey the mood in the House, as well as covering the speeches and the votes themselves. The BBC had two outstanding journalists, Peter Hardiman Scott and Conrad Vos Bark, as their team leaders, and they set the standards still prevailing today for accurate, informative, and even-handed political broadcasting. Most of the action was in the Commons, but occasionally one of us was required to go along the corridors of Westminster to the House of Lords. There the atmosphere was quieter, less confrontational, and more or less what would be expected from a group of, on the whole, elderly, experienced, and often extremely well-qualified politicians. We did not expect to find ourselves reporting on a day of drama in the House of Lords. After all, none of them had been elected, and they knew and accepted the limitations on their powers. Without a written constitution, with a hereditary monarch as head of state, and one of its two houses of parliament also unelected, the United Kingdom can be portrayed as quaint, anachronistic, and by some, undemocratic. These views are usually countered by pointing out that the system works for us at any rate. We can change our MPs every 5 years if we wish. The House of Lords abides by the convention, among others, of not interfering with budgetary decisions taken by the elected members of the Commons, and the monarch acts in her official capacity only on the advice of her Prime Minister and the government of the day. Tradition and convention rule. Or do they? Last Monday, when debating the government's proposed tax credit cuts, the Lords, or at least a majority of them, decided to go unconventional. An alliance of Lib Dem and Labour peers, together with other crossbenchers and bishops, outvoted the government, forcing the Chancellor into a rethink over the effect of the plans on the poorer members of society. Two issues had become entangled. The matter of the tax cut credits themselves and the position and role of the upper chamber in the 21st century. What has happened clearly annoyed, to put it very mildly, both the Prime Minister and the Chancellor. From Downing Street, the Prime Minister is determined we will address this constitutional issue. A convention exists and it has been broken. So, even as you are reading this, there may well have been some heavy-duty action from Numbers 10 and 11. Whatever your views on the above matters, you will probably agree that the House of Lords is one of our great institutions. We are fond these days of using that description for some favoured place or event. The monarchy, Parliament itself, the Proms, the NHS, the BBC, Wimbledon and so on. Alternatively, we also have our national treasures. Dame Maggie Smith, Dame Judi Dench, Sir Bobby Charlton, Sir Paul and Ringo among them. So how about Mr. Bond? James Bond. Or Commander Bond RN if you go back far enough. I have not yet seen Spectre, movie number 24, but I certainly intend to do so. It is over 50 years since I saw Dr. No in a cinema in Putney, and I haven't missed one yet. Why? What is it about the books and the movies? He is not a nice man. You would not want your daughter to marry him. And yet, Bond fascinates. A fantasy figure, together with the girls, the gadgets, the settings, the villains, the cars, M and Q. Enough for me. Sorry, Mr. Craig. You're OK, but you're not Mr. Connery. Bond? Yes, a national treasure.
And now two items from Belgarum. And the first under the heading, Barrister Competes in Coffee Art Competition. Some say coffee at this Winchester cafe is too pretty to drink. One of the reasons for Caracoli's popularity is its presentation. And at the weekend, the head barista headed for Italy to compete in a latte art contest. Dan Tamang, brewed for Britain in the Milano Latte Art Challenge, following his third victory in the UK Championships. Our man ultimately lost to an Irish chap, but Caracoli was not too downbeat. Taking part is a sign of considerable artistic talent, a spokesman said. And there are two photographs, one of Dan Tamang himself, looking resplendent in a dinner jacket and bow tie, and the second of his hands drawing an artistic design in the cream on the top of the coffee in the coffee cup. And the second item, unused fountain springs to life once more. After nearly 25 years, the defunct fountain at King's Walk finally has a use. Resourceful flower traders have turned Winchester's miserable water feature into a makeshift stall complete with artificial grass. It marks a significant turnaround in the area's public image. Coming almost a year to the day since nearby benches smeared in urine and tomato ketchup by drunken louts were removed. Police continue to clamp down on antisocial behaviour, but the area is not without its ongoing problems.
Right, then we move on to what's on and announcements. What's on this week? For Saturday the 7th of November, that's a week's time, there's a Christmas fair in aid of the Wessex Cancer Trust, St John's House in the Broadway between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. On Tuesday the 10th of November, the Christmas lights will be turned on in the city centre by Matt Baker from The One Show, and that coincides with the arrival of the Rickshaw Challenge coming into Winchester that evening. On Wednesday the 11th of November, at the Theatre Royal, Ralph McTell, the songwriter and guitarist, is performing. For box office details, 01962 840440. On Saturday the 14th of November, in Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m, the Southampton Choral Society are performing Dream of Gerontius. For tickets, telephone the Cathedral box office, 01962 857 275. On November the 18th, running through to the 21st at the Theatre Royal, the Winchester Operatic Society are presenting Carmen. The evening performance is at 7:30, and there's a matinee on Saturday at 2:30. The Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. And finally, on Friday the 11th of December, I'll give you advance warning of this one, the Winchester Cathedral Christmas Concert is being held with the choirs of Winchester Cathedral, and the event is hosted by Sally Taylor from BBC South Today. The box office for the Cathedral, 01962 857 275. The lighting up time ends Friday the 30th of October at 6:53 a.m. and begins at 4:44 p.m. On Wednesday next, the 4th of November, it ends at 7:02 a.m. and begins at 4:35 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed, Team to Study Atlantic Rock. And there's a wonderful photograph of the boat that they refer to, the Southampton-based RRS James Cook, looking with a fantastically curved bow and looks like it could take on anything. Not huge, but here we are. Could a humble rock hold the answers to some of the universe's greatest questions? That is what an international team of scientists hope to find out when they set sail from Southampton on an ambitious six-week voyage to the mid-Atlantic Ocean. When they begin their venture on board the RRS James Cook from the National Oceanography Centre on Monday, they will sail to the Atlantis Massif, a huge underwater mountain. And the team hope they may hold the answer to questions on how life began on Earth and what is required for life on other planets. It will be the first time that seabed deep sea drills have been used to collect valuable rocks in this way. They will be used to collect samples of the unstable serpentinite, rock, which forms part of the massif, between 750 and 1750 metres beneath the waves. The area collecting them from next to the Lost City, the first area of its kind to be discovered on the planet, that is dotted with huge chimneys up to 60 metres high that vent methane and hydrogen into the water around them. The unique environment created at this massif could allow scientists to work out more about how life started on Earth. And it could even be used alongside future missions to Mars and Jupiter's moon Europa to work out if life is possible or has already existed elsewhere in the galaxy. It will also be the first major European expedition of its kind to be headed by three women: American senior research scientist Dr. Beth Orcutt, Swiss expert Professor Gretch Frew-Green, and British expedition manager and geoscientist Carol Cotterill. Mrs. Cotterill only got the call to lead the project when one of her colleagues ruptured an Achilles tendon. She said, "This gives us access to an environment we have never been able to explore. This will allow us to push the boundaries further and further with technology, which means we are pushing the boundaries of science all the time." University of Southampton geophysicist Gay Bayraki is the only representative from the city taking part in the sea expedition. The 36-year-old will be responsible for analysing the rocks. She said, "I am very excited about taking part."
The next item is headed MP Speaks Out Over Legal Highs. Winchester MP Steve Brine has spoken about the dangers of shops selling legal highs. In a debate on the Psychoactive Substances Bill in Parliament, Mr. Brine mentioned a store in the city which has sparked hundreds of complaints. It comes after Hampshire Police launched a week-long campaign exposing the dangers of taking new psychoactive substances, NPS, better known as legal highs. The government recently announced plans for a blanket ban on so-called legal highs, which have been blamed for scores of deaths across the country. Mr. Brine said, "Winchester has its store on Stockbridge Road, which is passed by hundreds of school and college students every day. It is even neatly placed right by the city railway station. I have been inundated with complaints about that shop from constituents, and I was pleased to give them our manifesto commitment, which we are debating today in response." He added that homeless charity Trinity Winchester has seen an increase in the number of homeless people in the city using legal highs. Mr. Brine added, "Sue and Michelle from Trinity confirmed to me ahead of today's debate the stark increase they have seen in clients under the effect of NPS. Equally, Winchester's night shelter sees the effect of NPSs on a daily basis in its work. The harm NPSs are causing and the complexity they are adding to already stretched public services is of grave concern to me as a constituency MP. This is supported by anecdotal reports from Winchester's mental health team, which reports considerable problems as a result of NPS use. According to figures from Hampshire Police, there are 16 shops selling new psychoactive substances, and analysis by the force suggests that there is more use of the drugs in areas surrounding these shops. The new Psychoactive Substances Bill is being introduced to outlaw the trade of legal highs, especially the new generation of chemical designer drugs that are synthesised to mimic the effects of traditional illicit substances, including cannabis and ecstasy."
Opera Festival to Move Home. The split was perhaps not quite so amicable as it might have appeared. Grange Park Opera is to leave its Alresford base after 18 years to almost certainly move to the home of former TV presenter Bamber Gascoigne in Surrey. The Baring family, the owners of the Grange at Northington, are to lease the neoclassical mansion to a new opera company from 2017. So did Grange Park Opera opera jump, or were they pushed? Negotiations had been ongoing for much of the year, and the Barings say they have secured the future of the event, which has become almost as famous on the opera circuit as Glyndebourne. A statement by Grange Park Opera to its supporters spoke of the decision by the landlords to terminate our lease early and how they sought to impose a new lease and certain conditions. It added, "On Monday, we were advised by our landlords that they no longer wished to continue discussions around a potential new lease for Grange Park Opera at the Grange, and that they intended to pursue their own interests there instead. The Grange Park Opera will run its festival at the Grange in 2016 before a likely move on a 99-year lease from 2017 to West Horsley Place, the home of Mr. Gascoigne, who presented University Challenge from the 1960s to the 1980s. A Grange Park Opera spokeswoman told the Chronicle, "We do not want to get into a he said, she said. The fact is, the lease was terminated unilaterally by the landlords. Discussions to try to agree a new lease were also terminated by the Barings. We are where we are. We are making 2016 at the Grange business as usual. We don't want to get into a long debate." Asked whether Grange Park Opera would have stayed at the Grange, the spokeswoman said, "We wouldn't have wanted to stay under any terms, but had we been able to negotiate something, a similar lease, then yes, we were hopeful that we were going to be able to, but we have to look at alternatives. We weren't expecting it, the announcement this week, but I'm not saying we were shocked. We're not seeking publicity for publicity's sake." The Chronicle sought a comment from Mark Baring, but he was unavailable. The new opera company at the Grange will be led by countertenor Michael Chance. The festival was founded in 1998 and has since developed into a national event, with Bryn Terfel appearing this year in Fiddler on the Roof.
And on quite a different note, rat infestation raises fears in residents. Residents in a block of flats in Winchester say they are scared to live in their homes because of rats making their lives a misery. People at the conservatory off Chessel Street say that the rodents have become brazen, scuttling in the kitchens and bedrooms in the middle of the day. The problem has been going on since April, according to Kate Bentley, 22, whose partner is Kirsten Collins, 27. She said, "They are everywhere, cupboards, hallways. They are jumping out at us and running at us, and you can hear them at night. We can't sleep, and it's meant my partner is staying at her mum's." Mum of two, Emma Tudor, 28, said, "I have been here for 2 years. I have not seen them in my flat, but I hear them at night, and it's giving me sleepless nights. I'm worried about my children coming into contact with them." Bosses at A2 Dominion say that they have arranged for pest control to treat the affected areas. Assistant Housing Director Anna Burridge said, "We regret that there has been an issue." And there's a photograph of the residence with said box with what I can see is three dead rats lying in it.
The next item is headed "New Shelters Causing a Stir." "It is very insulting to Hampshire." This was one opinion on new bus shelters in the Itchen Valley. "The structures have had mixed reviews and caused quite a stir. They were paid for, built and designed by the South Downs National Park after Itchen Valley Parish Council said they could not afford to replace dilapidated shelters along the B3047. One local, who did not wish to be named, said, "There's shock in the Itchen Valley about them. This is the thin end of the wedge. They are very crude, very drafty and very ugly. They look like something Bilbo Baggins would use. It is very insulting to Hampshire." Similar views have been voiced by more than 195 Facebook users on the website page Winchester Picks. One person likened them to something out of the Flintstones. Local City Councillor Kim Gottlieb said, "They are a very interesting set of designs and they have attracted a lot of attention. It has had probably as many people liking them as disliking them. Time will tell if they withstand the weather." And there's a picture of the shelters here. They look fairly sturdy, but it's a very rustic sort of design with rounded poles and wattle-woven panels at the sides and a rather strange slanting roof, which has probably got wooden shingles on it. They are quite open, so when it rains, I'm not sure quite how they'll get on.
Charities concern over benefit cuts. A Winchester charity is concerned by government changes to the benefit system. Winchester GOLD, which helps people with learning difficulties, is worried about changes that will see the disability living allowance change to the personal independence payments, PIP. The changes will mean new applications and coordination from the administrators, including Hampshire County Council and ATOS Healthcare. The charity fears that the process of applying for the new PIP payments is too complex and has called for the County Council to do more to advise people affected by the changes. A spokesman for Winchester GOLD said, "Welfare reform is necessary, but this transition, designed to save more than £600 million a year, risks leaving vulnerable adults with disabilities unfairly out of pocket." The process of claiming PIP is daunting, and the DLA payment simply stops, whether or not the new PIP payment has started.
End of an era for ploughing. And there are some wonderful photographs which I shall describe to you, or I'll try to, first. They're headed a step back in time, heavy horses on Barton Farm, and there's some beautiful photographs of the fields that they're doing the ploughing practice with these horses. It's like a picture from another era, as they are contesting to who does the best plough. There are also some old tractors up and down these fields in broad lines, and in the distance the trees and a slightly misty scene. It's just beautiful. In a few short months, this land will be developed for housing. Heavy horses and vintage machines worked the fields at Barton Farm in Winchester for the last time on Saturday before the construction of 2,000 homes. Winchester Grow More Club's annual contest, pitting dozens of farmers against each other to cultivate the finest plots, celebrates its 30th anniversary this year. The club chairman, Ian Ralph, fears the hobby is declining, with stagnating membership and fields being snacked up by developers. "There's no youngsters, that's the problem," said Mr. Ralph, manager of Enmill Farm in Pitt. "That's modern farming, I'm afraid. Today we've got 44 competitors, and we're on 15 hectares. That shows you how much ground we need. As development comes, this is getting less and less." Three generations of the Smith family at Leckford took part, as did Derek Allen, a tractor driver from Sutton Scotney. He said, "It's traditional. It's quite nice to see the old horses and some of the old farm vehicles kept alive, and to see the vintage tractors. We need farmland to feed the population, but we also need housing, don't we? People need housing, but it's sad to see that farmland disappearing."
New housing plan given green light. Civic chiefs have rubber-stamped Winchester's house building programme for the next 20 years. Public objection to the draft local plan for 12,500 new homes was remarkably limited, councillors were told, as they approved the plans for government inspection. The programme would dictate where thousands of homes are built between now and 2031, including many in rural areas. Winchester City Council deputy leader, Councillor Vicky Weston, praised civic officers for their years of work and handling of more than 1,000 public comments. She said, inevitably, the plan deals with some controversial issues and sites, but the level of public objection is remarkably limited. Many people have supported the plans, allocations and policies. This reflects the extent of the early and ongoing public involvement in the process. Full council backed the scheme almost unanimously at a summit last Wednesday. The only objector, Councillor Ian Tate, said he wanted to burst into tears over Winchester's transformation into an expensive, elitist city. Winchester is wonderful, but it's not an inclusive city. People who aren't earning £70,000 to £80,000 a year will not be able to afford to live here, said Councillor Tate, criticising the council's struggle to make 40% of new homes available at so-called affordable rent. I've become increasingly upset and saddened by the process, and I've not had that reassurance that over the life of this plan, Winchester will not become a more expensive, more elitist city to live in. Alresford councillors Simon Cook and Ernie Jeffs abstained amid ongoing controversy over the plan's impact on the town. Many residents are furious that most of Alresford's 500 new houses will be built off Sun Lane. Councillor Margot Power, the third Alresford councillor, voted in favour. The plan allocates sites for 4,000 homes in Winchester, including the Barton Farm scheme, 3,500 at North Whiteley, 3,000 west of Waterlooville, 500 each in Bishop's Waltham and Alresford, and hundreds across villages, including Kingsworthy, South Wanston and Waltham Chase. It is also hoped the plan will further empower the council to reject unwanted planning applications. Concerns were raised about affordable housing, traffic, pollution, and the council's ability to protect workplaces and play areas. Local Plan 2 will be submitted to the government in March, with examination hearings in early summer, before the inspector reports next October. If approved, the plan will be adopted in November 2016.
Hannah seals world record with century. She is the rising athletic star who has smashed her way into the record books. Hannah Bloxage from Chandler's Ford took her first steps to ignite her love for running at Southampton's inaugural Junior Park Run. The seven-year-old enjoyed the thrill of the chase so much she returned every Sunday, come rain or shine, becoming a familiar face at the weekly timed run and taking her whole family along. Now she is celebrating reaching an incredible milestone after becoming the first youngster in the world to complete a century of junior park runs. The schoolgirl was in the spotlight at a double celebration, also marking the organisation's 100th run and its record attendance of 201 children. Hannah got her athletics career up and running at the opening event in Riverside Park, Woodmill Lane, on November the 24th, 2013. Since then, her brother Jamie, 6, takes part along with his sister Ella, 10, who suffers from disability, Rett syndrome, and needs support from parents Gaz and Nikki. And there's a photograph of a smiling and proud Hannah standing by the finish of the park run with her sweatshirt bearing her name, Hannah, and underneath 100 to mark the century she's achieved.
Cathedral graduation for university students. Nearly 2,000 students graduated from Winchester University last week, with famous faces amongst those honoured. The 8 ceremonies were hosted by the Chancellor, Alan Titchmarsh, in the TV Gardener's first official act in the honorary role. Around 1,900 business, law, sport, humanities, social sciences, education, health, social care and arts students graduated in the ceremonies that ran over 4 days in Winchester Cathedral. Among those honoured was BBC Saturday presenter Sally Taylor, who was awarded an honorary doctorate. She has been a main presenter on the programme for some 20 years. Trained as an English teacher, Sally has built a successful career as a journalist and regional broadcaster and was awarded an MBE in 2005, the Queen's Birthday Honours List. Ex-Labour cabinet member and co-founder of the Liberal Democrats, Shirley Williams, was also presented with a doctorate. She has been a member of the House of Lords since 1993, where she was spokesperson on foreign and Commonwealth affairs and leader from 2001 to 2004. Shirley was then advisor to the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown. Author Richard Adams was another to be honoured at the university. The 95-year-old found fame in 1972 as the award-winning writer of the children's classic novel Watership Down. He became a full-time author in 1974 and has written 19 books, three of which have been turned into films. Honorary doctorates were additionally presented to Stephen Payne, a consultant at Maritime Consulting, Joyce De Silva, Compassion in World Farming's ambassador, and Anita Prem, human rights campaigner. Jane Rudling, Miranda McKierney, Kevin Spurgeon, Catherine Gladwell, Robert Taylor, Wasfi Karni, founder of Grange Park Opera, were all given honorary fellowships. And there's the usual wonderful photograph of five girls smiling away with long, clean, shining hair and a little makeup and their mortarboard hats and their, what are they called, robes with a sort of purple ribbon round the top, obviously having just all got their degrees or honours or whatever.
Historians at Winchester University have offered their expertise to a BBC historical drama set during the reign of King Alfred. Producers at Carnival Films, which also made Downton Abbey, turned to medieval experts at the university to help with Viking drama The Last Kingdom. Dr. Ryan Lavelle, reader in medieval history, was drafted in as a consultant to the multi-million pound drama series, an adaptation of Bernard Cornwell's best-selling franchise, The Saxon Stories. The BBC series, which started on BBC Two last week, takes viewers to the 9th century, when King Alfred's Kingdom of Wessex stood alone against the Vikings as they stormed the northern regions. It focuses on themes of politics, religion, warfare, courage, love and loyalty. As previously reported in the Chronicle, the university has been at the forefront of Anglo-Saxon research, shedding light on this period and the final resting place of King Alfred. In 2014, the university and Hyde 900 discovered a pelvic bone thought to belong to Alfred the Great or his eldest son. Dr. Lavelle said, "It was great to be able to provide historical notes for the series scriptwriter and production team and to travel to Hungary to work on set during part of the filming. It has been a very exciting project to work on, and I am pleased that the first episode earned some great reviews when broadcast in America earlier this month. It is wonderful to be able to weave historical accuracy into a popular production like this," he added. "I hope that bringing history to life in people's homes will inspire a whole new generation to explore the past in a way that really interests them." Dave Dawson, who plays King Alfred, said, "What thrilled me about this story was you see the famous statue in Winchester of Alfred the Great, so you picture this heroic warrior king." The second episode of The Last Kingdom airs on BBC Two tonight, that was yesterday night, at 9 p.m.
Colourful fundraiser. Children at a Winchester nursery ran in the colours of the rainbow to raise money for young people with life-threatening illness. Maples Day Nursery has raised more than £170 through costume days and activities inspired by the recent Southampton Rainbow Run. Amy Stubbington, 24 years of age, a practitioner at the Hatherley Road Centre in Fulford, took part in the 3-kilometre run and has helped pupils dress in a different colour every day. The money went to Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospice, where Miss Stubbington is a regular volunteer. She said, "This charity means a great deal to me because I am surrounded by happy, healthy and confident children every single day. Seeing them running about the garden, so obviously enjoying themselves, makes the fundraising effort for seriously ill children, many of whom spend their short lives hooked up to machines, so important and incredibly worthwhile." Maple's manager, Rebecca Pickles, added, "We are enormously proud of Amy for all the work she does for this charity. She is an excellent role model." And there's a photograph, a very pretty photograph of a large number of children with Amy and five other mums with them, all looking very happy and splendid.
Crowds cheer for regiment on Freedom March. Excuse me. One of Britain's largest army regiments marched through Winchester on Saturday. Hundreds of people cheered the adjutant general's calls down the high street despite grey skies threatening to rain on their freedom parade. Winchester-born Lieutenant Colonel Mark John led around 150 troops from Peninsula Barracks down to a reception at the Guildhall. Marching to the band and bugles of the Rifles, also based in the city, the corps was joined by forces and veterans from the Royal Military Police. The AGC has served in more than 30 countries and boasts more than 9,000 soldiers and officers, 10% of the Army's troops. At the Guildhall, soldiers were met by around 300 residents and dignitaries, including the Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson, City Councillor Leader Councillor Stephen Godfrey, and Angela Clear, Mayor of Winchester. Echoing her speech to the King's Royal Hussars at their Freedom Parade in June, Councillor Clear hailed the Army's links to the city, stretching back nearly 2,000 years. The former Royal Army Pay Corps, amalgamated to form the AGC in the 1990s, was granted freedom of entry in 1970. It last exercised its right to bear arms in 2008. Its home, Worthy Down Camp, is undergoing a £250 million refurbishment to become Britain's first training college for all three armed services. Most soldiers on parade trained in Hampshire at Sir John Moore Barracks or Worthy Down. Lieutenant Colonel John said, "This is a big deal for everybody that's here. They've come from across the country and some have come from Germany. How often do you get to do something like this? Winchester is a beautiful town and I've got the personal link to it." Among the soldiers was Warrant Officer Class 2 Paula Ayling, the regiment's most senior female officer who has just moved to Barton Stacey. She said it was an honour and privilege to march. And there are several photographs, one of the Guildhall looking really impressive with the Mayor and Lord Lieutenant about to take the salute. And the soldiers in the high street behind the band of the Rifles, and another one of the band in the Broadway in front of the statue of King Alfred, all with the magnificent red plumes coming from their helmets or caps. And another of these soldiers approaching the Mayor and Lord Lieutenant, the Guildhall, and lined up absolutely immaculately. But what's fascinating is there are about five or six female soldiers who are wearing skirts, and you see the line of immaculate trousers and jackets, and then the legs, the stocking legs of the ladies. It's quite interesting to see, all again with their red caps, and very impressive to see.
And now for an item on football. Winchester City hope their decision to bring forward their eagerly awaited FA Trophy tie against Weymouth to this Friday at 7:45 p.m., is rewarded with a big gate. On paper, the first qualifying round match promises to be a mouth-watering spectacle, with the Terrors sitting third in the Southern Premier Division and Winchester scoring goals galore in their first season back in Division One South and West. City's Director of Football, Dave Malone, knows Weymouth goalkeeper manager Jason Matthews well from their days together at Eastleigh. He is delighted Dorset's sleeping giants were up for switching from the regular Saturday afternoon slot to Friday night. It's a chance to get a decent-sized crowd in, and it gives the players the weekend off, so it seemed the right thing to do, said Malone. Obviously, it makes it a bit harder for the travelling Weymouth fans, but hopefully it will bring a lot of people in from the local area, who might otherwise have gone elsewhere had we played on Saturday. I spoke to Jason Matthews, and Weymouth were in complete agreement about playing on Friday night, which was nice to hear. City go into the game in red-hot home form, having hit four past both Banbury United and Bishop's Cleeve in their last two Denplan City ground outings. And in 25-goal Warren Bentley, they boast the South and West's most prolific scorer. The Terrors' pedigree squad includes former Salisbury City duo Chris Shepherd and Chris McPhee, and ex-Plymouth Argyle and Truro City striker Stuart Yetton, who all boast Football League experience.
Group celebrates. Winchester Stroke Support Group celebrated its fifth birthday with a party at Winall Community Centre. Former members and volunteers and representatives of the Stroke Association joined current members to enjoy sandwiches, scones and tea at the hall on Garbett Road. Christine Russell, who's been a member since the group began, cut the birthday cake. Elsie White, group chairman, recalled the many varied activities and outings enjoyed over the past 5 years. She said she hoped that with more members, it would continue successfully to help stroke survivors in the Winchester area.
Surgery plans to go on show. An exhibition of the proposed new Winchester doctor surgery will be on display next month. The display will show the proposals for the St Clement's surgery currently in Tanner Street. It is due to be relocated as part of the Silver Hill scheme, which is currently due to start later this year. Planning permission for the surgery on the corner of Upper Brook Street and Friars Gate expired in July. The surgery scheme will be on show at the Guildhall on November 20th, 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. and November 21, 10 a.m. to noon. The purpose is an opportunity to view the emerging designs for the new surgery, and the architects will be on hand to answer any questions. The original scheme on the site of the Upper Brook Street car park received planning approval in 2012. The replacement surgery is closely based on the previously agreed design, but incorporates some changes to reflect the current needs of the practice. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, the leader of Winchester City Council, said, "I'm pleased to announce that councillors agreed at the Cabinet meeting on September the 17th to proceed with the new surgery. Local architects, Architecture PLB, have been working on the design of the new facility, plus pharmacy, with the doctors and the local NHS. Last week, the Chronicle reported that the City Council is under pressure to sever the doctor's surgery from the main development. There are fears among the practice's 17,000 patients that the new building will not be ready in time. The council says the surgery cannot be severed from Silver Hill, as without the development there is no buyer for the 1960s building. The issue is set to be debated at full council next month, and there's a rather nice photograph of the new proposed St Clement surgery, with trees and paving around it, which for a modern building really is quite attractive."
Girls shed hair in memory of Allegra Whitome. Five Winchester schoolgirls have given up their long locks in memory of a friend who died earlier this year. The girls, all pupils of St Swithin's School, donated their tresses to the Little Princess Trust, which makes wigs for children who have lost hair through cancer treatments. The girls were inspired by their friend and fellow St Swithin's pupil, Allegra Whitome, who died suddenly in February, just 16 days after her 16th birthday. Allegra, who lived at Weald near Alsford, had also donated her hair to the charity. She was a keen sportswoman, taking part in athletics, lacrosse and horse riding events. Family and friends took part in the New Forest Marathon on September the 13th to raise money for Allegra Ambitions, a charity that was set up in her memory. The annual event saw more than 4,000 runners take on the course, with 800 participating for Allegra's charity. They raised £25,000, with 10% going to the marathon's community fund. The five girls went for the chop recently at the Parchment Street Salon of Guy Creamer And there's a picture of the five girls sitting there, their hair now just about below their ears, and they're each holding up a bunch of their hair. Well done, girls.
Private talks to overhaul senior staff. A planned shake-up of senior Winchester Council staff has been discussed in private. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of Winchester City Council, said the reorganisation would help to produce a more efficient council, but declined to comment on whether jobs were at risk. It is unclear what changes have been proposed, but Councillor Godfrey said it concerns senior officers. He said it's part of an ongoing programme of reorganisation that has been going on for 18 to 20 months. This is one more step along the way to running a more efficient council, so we can deal with the challenges of reduced government funding. The proposals were discussed by Cabinet last Wednesday. The proposals on organisational development were also discussed in private last month by the Personnel Committee, which deals with human resources at the Guildhall. Conservative councillor Rose Burns wants the council to wait until the results of an independent review of the Silver Hill scheme and boundary changes at the 2016 election before staffing moves are agreed. She has also called for a public debate over the unprecedented number of complex projects in Winchester, including station approach.
And now for something completely different. Pony's death is unrelated to 90s attack, says police. Police have allayed worries after initially fearing a horse had been killed with injuries consistent to an attack near Alsford. The discovery of the dead horse was made in four marks in a field off Willis Lane last Thursday. Police quickly moved to tell horse owners in the area to stay vigilant, and reassurance patrols were carried out by Hampshire's police and Thames Valley officers. However, a post-mortem on Friday revealed that the injuries were caused naturally and by other animals. Police initially kept an open mind on whether the incident was connected to a spate of horse attacks in the 90s. A horse called Mountbatten was killed in four marks in 1993, but no one was ever prosecuted despite more than 20 arrests. A police spokesman said, "Officers investigating after a pony was found dead on Thursday afternoon are satisfied that there is no suspicious activity linked to this incident. The pony appeared to have injuries consistent with an attack. However, following a forensic examination by a vet, it appears the animal died of natural causes. Other injuries, which may have indicated the pony had been attacked, are thought to have been caused by other animals after the pony died."
Hyde 900 has announced new plans to help mark King Alfred's importance to Winchester. A packed Saturday afternoon meeting at Hyde Parish Hall heard Hyde 900 founder and committee member Edward Fennell map out the vision. The group is calling for the installation of an infrastructure of conventional and digital information around the Hyde site, so that people could better understand both the story of Alfred and the monastery where he was buried. Mr. Fennell said, "There is the fine statue of Alfred in the Broadway and a silver coin in the museum, but there is nowhere in Winchester which explains in depth what he achieved in his life and his legacy, which can still be felt today. That can now be done both digitally and in traditional style in the Hyde Abbey King Alfred project, the lost minster of Alfred the Great. The group hopes to install information boards around the site of Hyde Abbey. Interactive points will also be dotted around the area where smartphones and tablets can be used to access additional information and images. Through their devices, visitors will be able to go to a new website, which Hyde 900 will be developing with the University of Winchester." Mr. Fennell said he wants to make the site a leading-edge facility. The group has also said that it wants to give guided tours of the area via a smartphone, focusing on Walter Aston, who was abbot of the abbey from the 1220s to the 1240s. Abbot Aston was an important figure at the time and was one of the witnesses when the Magna Carta was reissued in 1225. A life-sized wooden carved figure of him is to be commissioned and placed in the chamber of Hyde Gate. A bird's-eye view, superimposed picture of the abbey, will also be installed in the gateway so that people can understand its scale and layout. Hyde 900 hope that the current showing of Bernard Cornwell's BBC television series The Last Kingdom, the view on Alfred will change. He added, "So, where can people find out about this extraordinary period in English history? The answer, I think, for most people who live in Hampshire, is this city, Winchester, which became Alfred's chief military centre."
Painting worth it. Council chiefs who spent more than £30,000 painting railings in a village have assured residents that they acted prudently. Eastern resident John Bendall was left flabbergasted after a Freedom of Information request revealed that Hampshire County Council spent £32,786 on bridges near his home. But transport officials say closing the road and keeping toxic chemicals out of the River Itchen contributed to the cost. The parapet railings were treated earlier this year to extend their life by 15 years. Contractors spent several weeks stripping the railings and adding what the council described as specialist weather-resistant paint. Mr. Bendall asked for the cost after noticing how long the work was taking. In a letter to the Itchen Valley News, Mr. Bendall said, "The residents and council taxpayers of Easton might be interested to know this interesting snippet. Am I alone in being utterly flabbergasted by this revelation?" Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "The work involved stripping the components back to bare metal and painting the bridges with three coats of specialist weather-resistant paint. To carry out the work safely for both the people using the route and the workforce, it was necessary to close the road and put in appropriate traffic management as well as environmental protection measures as required by the Environmental Agency."
Excuse me. Park fracking proposals. Campaigners have attacked a government U-turn that could result in fracking being carried out beneath the New Forest and the South Downs National Park. A cross-party committee of MPs debated on Tuesday the potential impact of fracking and the level of protection given to special areas of the English countryside. The government originally pledged that fracking would be banned in national parks. But new regulations say energy companies will be allowed to drill horizontally under protected zones as long as the wells are outside the boundaries. Prime Minister David Cameron has said that shale gas exploration will create thousands of jobs and cut reliance on imports. But the government's U-turn has sparked fears that the national parks will be ringed by shale gas operators. There are licences to explore around Winchester. Daisy Sands, head of energy at Greenpeace, said the new rules were set to be rushed through without a debate in the House of Commons. She added, "The government is riding roughshod over democracy to industrialise our most beautiful landscapes. It is deeply disturbing, and is a photograph of the most horrible installation of pipes and ladders and fences and chimneys and whatever is involved in making a fracking well."
A charity that has raised money for the main hospital in Winchester since the 1950s has been honouring some of its long-serving supporters. The Friends of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital held their 60th annual general meeting on October the 20th and bade farewell to several long-serving members of the committee. There is a photograph showing Margot Meredith, who served for 20 years, and Pat Haddock with 23 years' service. Helen Morgan, who is also retiring after a further 15 years, was not able to attend the meeting. The new chairman of the Friends is Richard Chisnell, who took over from Jeff Cox after his second 3-year term as chairman, with a total of 25 years' service to the friends between them. In the centre of the picture is the friend's secretary, Liz Colley, who has achieved a mighty 39 years of service to the friends so far. The Friends of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital are holding a Diamond Jubilee birthday party on Friday, November the 13th at St John's House in Winchester, for which all 150 tickets have been sold. The charity is independent of the NHS and so far this year has made grants of £59,000, with the largest being £25,195 to the orthodontic department for a drill system. Since it was founded, the charity has raised more than £2 million towards care at the hospital on Romsey Road.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Angela Ling and Judith Steventon-Baker. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Daphne Poupard.
Goodbye.
Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.